Good evening and welcome to tonight's episode of Political Prisoner Radio. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed, and I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines called the United States of America. We're sorry for the late start. We had some technical issues. You ever get that screen that says unable to connect to the internet, but you're connected to the internet? You know, that I haven't figured that one out. But anyway, while we're late, we are on the air with another episode of Political Prisoner Radio, as I stated. We have a returning guest to the program tonight. Ray Levashore is joining us again. I believe the last time Ray was on the program was either in 2012. I believe it was 2012 as I was checking the archives today. And he is coming on to speak to us about Thomas Manning, another former member of the United Freedom Front, who's serving time for self-defense against a killer cop, a would-be killer cop. So he played self-defense, you know, police brutality, police violence, outright execution of people in the street. That's really at the forefront on a lot of people's mind with the things that's going on in Ferguson, the rebellion in Ferguson, which now we can just say in St. Louis, that entire area, things popping off around the country related to these senseless killings. And this is something that has always been going on in this country ever since the creation of the first police department from the quote-unquote slave patrols. All right, so we are going to be talking about Thomas Manning. I understand that, you know, he's up for parole. We'll find out from Ray what people can do, what actions, if any, they can take to try to swing the parole in, you know, his favor. But as with all political prisoners, there are always challenges with that. As you know, I don't have to tell those who are a part of the regular fight on behalf of these political prisoners. After we speak to Ray, we will talk about the New York Post posted an editorial calling Sunday Ada Akoli a cop killer. Totally biased article. It's really regurgitated Associated Press stuff. You might as well say the police unions wrote it for them, but that was published today. New York Post is read by, I suspect, millions of people. So, you know, they're joining the pro-cop propaganda efforts to deny political prisoners their freedoms. And then last but not least, we have some update on Rusmia Olda, Pakistani activist who is going through a trial and some things in Detroit, and there are some upcoming actions on her behalf. But without further delay, I want to welcome on my co-host and co-producer, Mija Whitlock, the woman responsible for putting these programs pretty much together every week. How you doing, sis?
I'm good. Good evening, Scotty, and thanks for coming back to join us, Brother Ray.
Glad to be here.
Brother Ray, it's been a while since we last talked to you. I do remember the first time that I had the opportunity to interview you, and you said something, you know, that I was thinking about today, and something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And you described like the NYPD to the terrorist organization Ku Klux Klan, you know, and you at one time questioned what's the difference between a lynching and, you know, a police officer shooting a black person in the head. So, I mean, that's just the real and the raw of it, and we're seeing it in the headlines. So, I mean, what have you been thinking, Ray, as you sit back and, you know, you see these headlines involving all this police brutality, violence, and murders?
Well, you know, Tom Manning is in prison for a self-defense killing of a police officer in New Jersey, and that's one of the charges that he's in prison for. And, you know, his defense is self-defense. And I just read something in the last day or two that this Ferguson cop that assassinated Michael Brown is now saying that he did so because he feared for his life. And that's exactly the defense that Tom Manning took at his trial, because the cop was trying to kill him. that Tom said, I fear for my life. So it was either him or me. And the cop emptied his gun at him. Unfortunately, he didn't hit him. But that defense doesn't work for people in the community. While it works for cops.
And if I can interject, why doesn't it work, Ray? What have you deduced as the problem of why it doesn't work? You know, I have my ideals about these juries and, you know, mainstream propaganda brainwashing a whole lot of folks. I mean, do you think that you see that as a problem as well, or do you see it differently?
One reason is because, you know, they have the power and we have so little of it. We have a lot of potential power, but they have real power, and it's reflected in what you referred to earlier in part, you know, by the New York Post editorial. You know, the organized forces of the police are tremendously powerful. So when somebody's trying to get out on parole, you know, a lot of the BLA prisons have come up for parole. It's always been these organized police associations and unions that have led the charge to try and prevent them from being released. I mean, the New York Post referred to me as a cop killer about 5 years ago, and I've never even been charged with killing a cop. But the organized forces of the police, taken on another level, like have at one time they prevented me from speaking at the University of Massachusetts. And on another occasion, when we had a art exhibit of Tom Manning's artwork, they forced the university to take that art down. And they are an extremely influential lobbying group. And with you know, the most significant sectors of the power structure. And that's something that's got to be changed if we're really going to move this struggle forward.
One of the things you mentioned about the art exhibit, and I saw the YouTube video of Tom's artwork, and he's a pretty gifted artist, I would say. That YouTube video is up. We'll try to link to it later in the podcast, but the police unions and supporters and, you know, come out to have that artwork removed. And we saw the same thing recently, although they weren't successful in preventing it. Now New Jersey wants to pass a law. No, I might have it mixed up with Pennsylvania, that wants to pass a law to that will prevent Mumia from speaking at the recent commencement that he gave. And from what I could gather from reading what I could find of this law, it would actually make it a crime, calling it like re-victimization. And, you know, my thoughts on it was, how can you re-victimize somebody that's already dead? Speaking of the dead officer or the dead cop, you know, how can you re-victimize somebody? And so it's like they're trying to extend it to their family members, you know, and it's nothing but police repression, suppressing of people's First Amendment rights. You know, many people are innocent of these crimes. Just because you have a conviction, as you alluded to earlier, the problem with these juries, just because there's a conviction, you know, doesn't mean that there's actual guilt. But yeah, they tried to prevent Mumia and now trying to pass a law.
Yeah, and you know, it's like you know, it certainly makes a difference whether you're in prison for something you've been falsely convicted of. You know, but, you know, when you've been in prison for 30, 35, 40 years, you've paid your debt, or whatever debt they say that you owe society. And the community needs you back.
I would agree with that. That's the thing that I'm seeing now in Sundiata. Coley's case is what the police unions and the state police are arguing, is that, you know, he killed the cops, so he should automatically get life in prison. He should be executed, whatever, you know, even though the appellate court is saying, you know, according under New Jersey law, he has served his time. You know, like you said, like what society has prescribed. And so what they're asking, well, you know, again, is they go on this propaganda campaign to really demonize this individual. And then lawmakers will come in trying to pass bills and stuff that, you know, isn't how their so-called democracy is supposed to work. But there's that undue influence that you alluded to, the power that they have.
Right, it's enormous power. I mean, when you start letting the police define free speech on campus at major universities, I mean, where the hell is that going to go? And when you let the police step in to a parole procedure and manipulate that policy to serve their ends as opposed to the purposes it was outlined for, to serve the community, then where's that going? You know, it's like, you know, are we going to let the police work right down to the Bill of Rights and they define every right we're supposed to have on paper?
Yeah, I would describe them as bullies from some of the stuff I've read, especially as it pertains to Mumia and him giving that audio commencement speech. It's not like they let him out of prison and, you know, he donned a cap and gone and went out there and gave this speech. No, he did it like he does his radio commentaries. It was recorded by someone, probably Noel Hammerhand, and then, you know, that was played, of course. And it does. It stymies, you know, free thought, especially among our students. It's like, why are you trying to keep this information away from our students? And, you know, it's, you know, there has to be a change. And I think, you know, we're fighting an uphill battle, of course, when it comes to media. But, you know, I think we have to do all we can to combat that. And that means, you know, better blogging campaigns, social media campaigns, because the police and the police unions and their supporters and those in the media, like the New York Post, seem to be working together to deny these people freedom.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about Thomas Manning. First, give us the details. He's coming up for parole, I believe, for a parole review in November. Is that correct?
Yeah, November 12th. Well, Tom Manning and I go back 40 years. We met in a group called SCAR that was a group of ex-cons, prisoners, family members of prisoners, other community members. We were primarily working on criminal justice issues and related things. We formed ourselves somewhat, adapted to our situation, the Black Panther Party Survival Program's approach to organizing, and took a lot of heat, eventually went underground. At that time also, along with the Scoop Scar we were in, we operated a radical bookstore called the Red Star North, and that bookstore was attacked. And it's in line with everything we're talking about here. I mean, raiding the bookstore without warrants, arresting people on bogus charges, physical assaults against our workers, death threats, the whole thing. It was in that climate, and this is 1974, when COINTELPRO was, you know, became recognized for the first time, really became publicized, when you think, 74, and then by early 75, you're getting into congressional hearings on this thing called COINTELPRO. And so that's when we decided to book and operate away from the eyes and ears of the government, since we seemed to be a persistent target of them at the time, along with a lot of other groups and a lot of other individuals that were politically active at the time. Well, eventually we formed with other people a group underground, and we were captured I was captured in 1984, Tom in 1985. But the federal charges that Tom was convicted of, and which he's doing a sentence for now, and which he's coming up for parole for now, involved bombings of physical structures back in the early 1980s, in which nobody was injured. The targets of those bombings were apartheid, for one. One of the targets was the office of the South African government in New York, and buildings of IBM, which was collaborating and supporting the apartheid government at the time. Other targets included military facilities that were connected to the wars in Central America at the time, particularly in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala. And when you look at it from that perspective, Tom Manning is probably one of the few prisons in the world that's doing prison time for actions connected to anti-apartheid resistance. And so those are the charges he's coming up for parole on.
I want to back up for just a moment. Could you repeat that? You know, because when we think of South African political prisoners, which I would actually consider him, you know, a political prisoner, a South African, of course, not that he's South African, but for the cause for which, you know, he was standing up for, and what he was in opposition to. But Nelson Mandela, we tend to think of him as, you know, the last political prisoner that South Africa, you know, or connected to the apartheid era. But really, I guess we could correctly say that Thomas Manning is as well, you know, of course, American citizen, but, you know, an international activist and, you know, the acts he's accused of, you know, is it makes him a political prisoner for apartheid or South Africa.
It does, and it's in that, you know, all the political prisoners, whether it's Tom Manning or Mutula Shakur or Cindy Arakuli, they come from a certain political and social context and history. And that history is a history that reflects the conflicts within, just talking about this country, in this society. And, you know, Jim Crow was apartheid. As far as I'm concerned, this new Jim Crow, which reflects itself in mass incarceration, is another dimension of apartheid. State apartheid in South Africa was what it is, and it produced a struggle. But until that struggle got to a certain point, Nelson Mandela was just branded a terrorist by the government of South Africa and by the United States government. You know, it wasn't until that struggle prevailed politically in South Africa that you can get people like Bill Clinton and Obama, you know, kissing Mandela's ass, trying to curry favor with him. Up until then, Mandela was just another prisoner. You know, and that's an important lesson because, you know, we've seen political prisoners released in post-apartheid South Africa. Those who were engaged in the struggle have been released, and we've seen it in Ireland.
Right.
And we're talking about places that do not abandon their political prisoners, that had held them close to their hearts, whether the struggle was at a low point or at a high point.
When you say
they
they
embrace these prisoners. They do it today in Palestine.
When you say that, Ray, the insinuation is there that do you think that the left or those, the so-called left, has abandoned the political prisoners here in the United States?
There's a certain degree of abandonment, but, you know, just this is serious is the fact that, we're talking about prisons here, some of whom have been in prison for decades. And unlike South Africa, which carried those prisons in their heart from one generation to the next, we have a gap in this country from the 60s and the 70s where that there's a generation gap where today's people today don't have a consciousness about the history of struggle in this country. They don't know COINTELPRO. I just came back a few weeks ago from a 5-city speaking tour up in the Northeast, Albany, New York, Buffalo, Cleveland, Ohio, up all around there. And if I see a lot of young people, for somebody my age, as young as anybody under 40, I suppose, it's like I cannot say COINTELPRO, Attica, Wounded Knee, Steve Biko. I can't say these things and assume that the people that are listening know who or what I'm referring to. I have to give a sentence or two of qualifying it.
That perfect example
has been lost in this country. It hasn't been carried right. forward because this movement in this country has taken a beating over the years.
Well, I would say that's by design, that the people don't know about it. Again, we're talking about a collusion between a mainstream press, as it's called, mainstream media collusion with law enforcement departments to, deny coverage or any knowledge, unless it's in a negative way, of these political prisoners and their stories, in their cases. And so, the people, of course, again, like what we saw with the reason why New Jersey State Police, or was it Pennsylvania State Police, that wanted to prevent Mumia from giving the commencement speech to these graduating students. And they don't want the young people to learn about, these revolutionary predecessors of theirs, that are still around, that are still among us, walking among us. And so, that's the challenge again. A lot of people talk about, as opposed to public education, we need to homeschool our children. Whether you have your child in public school or not, you should be homeschooling them on what they're not going to be exposed to in these schools. It'll give them a whole different perspective. I believe, again, that's the challenge that we face when other people control the means of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why this book of Tom's art is like, it's taken us. This is a beautiful book. I mean, I think everybody should have it, but it's difficult to get the marketing and distribution and promotion for it, and it's available, but it's not getting reviewed in the New York Times, or and certainly not the New York Post. New York Post, the police are willing to ignore this book unless this book starts to get attention. Then they're going to talk. They're going to want to see it off the shelf. They're not going to want to see it in a library or in a bookstore or some high school kid's hand, because like right on the cover is his portrait of Assata Shakur, that incensed the police when we did the art show. Is that not only were they incensed about Tom's art being up, but the fact that one of the portraits was of Assata Shakur.
Of course. Ray, stick with us. We need to take our first break and come back, and I want to tell people where they can get more information on Thomas Manning. You're listening to Political Prisoner Radio. My name is Scotty Reed, of course. co-hosted by Sister Amija Whitlock. Our guest tonight is Ray Labashore, and we're speaking about political prisoner Thomas Manning. We broadcast every Sunday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. A big shout out to our listeners in Greenville, South Carolina on WMXP. We'll be right back.
Exist in a state of vainglorious as we are protected by the red, the black, and the green. Heed the words of the brother.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back. Once again, you're listening to Political Prisoner Radio. My name is Scotty Reed, and we're speaking with Ray Labashore about the police unions. I say that this is like really fascism, you know, from what I understand about political systems and how they work. I mean, it's just extreme right wing fascism to me, you know, a collusion between the corporations, the politicians and the law enforcement. You know, that's like, it's like the shadow government, you know. I don't think we could say the United States has a legitimate government, at least not one that I recognize.
No, it's a plutocracy. it's corporate owned and police run.
Right. Now, both of you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Tom also have a military background?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons we kind of connected the way we did is we both grew up in, you know, working class backgrounds. He came from a large Irish family in Boston. I grew up in a French Canadian family in Maine, in what I call the shadow of the mills. I grew up right, you know, almost spitting distance from the shoe factories and textile mills that existed back then. And we both ended up like others from our backgrounds, we both ended up going to Vietnam, and after Vietnam, we both ended up in state prisons, and, you know, there was no consideration given to us then for our Vietnam service. It was like, no, it's time for you to go to prison now, and so those were, you know, important crossroads in our lives, and it was, you know, going through those crossroads that politicized us. And then,
I was reading.
You know, like I said before, it's like, you know, I've been a soldier for imperialism and against imperialism. And it's like, you know, when they trained us and armed us and sent us out to kill people halfway around the world, so that the United States could expand its influence and control the resources of another country, that was fine. We could do whatever we wanted. But once we got once back in this country and to use our military training in some capacity to try and check U.S. imperialism, then we're criminals and terrorists. I mean, the hypocrisy of it is astounding.
It truly is. If you really look at it, it is astounding. I don't think there's a better word to describe it. And that's why I say, you know, there is no legitimate government that I recognize, because you say one thing and you expect others to follow, you know, laws that you don't even follow yourselves. You flout the international laws or the United Nations human rights committees can tell you to stop torturing people through solitary confinement. You continue to do that. You get called out for police violence and murder. And it's like, you know, they don't care. They just do whatever they want to do. But I mean, you're exactly right. And I just don't understand, because I'm a veteran too, why more of us who we, you know, like you stated, at one time was on the payroll of imperialist America, getting that paycheck. And, but, you know, whatever crossroads we came across or whatever influenced us to take the views that we take today, why more of us aren't really using those skills, you know, in a fashion that's going to benefit the people. In revolutionary acts.
I understand that totally, and you're right. But I'll tell you, the police wouldn't be doing what they're doing unless they didn't see that the potential was there. You know, I come out of a small French Canadian community in Maine, small town. I mean, I didn't know anything about anything until that war hit me, and. If I can come out of a background like I did, or Tom Manning can come out of the projects in Boston and make the kind of decisions he did with his life and make the kind of commitment he did, you know, it's like anybody can do it. And I think the police understand this, and so doesn't the media. And that's why you're seeing a move against Mumia right now, trying to silence him, try to further silence him. Because, I mean, look at what's happened in the wake of the assassination of Michael Brown. There's nothing new about Michael Brown. The reaction to it is somewhat different, at least in 2014, by the people. But there's nothing new about it, in a sense, because if you look at the Black Panther Party and BLA prisons that are in prison now, they all go back to communities and times in which exactly these kind of assassinations were taking place on a regular basis. And so they feel it's necessary to silence Mumia or keep Sundiata Okoli in a box where you can't get to hear him. You know, keep Leonard Peltier in prison. Sekou, Jalil, all of them. They come out of a history of resisting this kind of police violence.
Right. Many of them were with the common background, also being former military.
Pardon me?
I said, and many of them also have the shared background of having former military experience.
Right. That brings Geronimo Pratt to mind also. A decorated general that was a very important leader of the Black Panther Party, who they went after.
Yeah, Eddie Conway was also a vet also.
Eddie Conway was a vet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oscar Lopez Rivera, Puerto Rican brother that's coming up. The big clemency campaign being pushed for him now. He's been in about 32 years. Vietnam vet, Bronze Star. Him and I were in Marion together. To let Mumia speak, or to let someone express themselves through their poetry or their art, people of struggle, they don't want that. They don't even want, the police and the corporate media do not even want the word political prisoner out there unless it refers to somebody in another country somewhere with a notion between us. Because the minute you say a person is a political prisoner, then you're looking back at the political context in which this prisoner emerged.
Right.
And there are those, that political context contained conflicts which to this day remain unresolved. If they had been resolved when the BLA was active, there wouldn't be what happened to Michael Brown, wouldn't have happened. You know, we'd be living in a different kind of society. Okay. Or those who perpetrate that kind of violence against people like Michael Brown would be held accountable. They would be the motherfuckers in the cells in the little boxes, not those who are resisting that kind of violence.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I wholeheartedly agree. And I guess what, you know, again, I'm kind of hoping that I am inspired to see the young people rise up and, you know, give unexpected response. than what, you know, we've been seeing over the past two decades or even three decades, you know, with the Al Sharpton-led marches. These students seem to be rejecting that formula, that, you know, and are engaging in more militant forms, more direct action, you know, interrupting the interstate highway commerce, and, you know, so, but I guess what I'm hoping for is to see a new generation also of veterans. You know, I wouldn't consider myself a young person. I'm 47 years old, but I try to take what I learned with communications in the U.S. Army and apply it to, you know, what we do now through putting, you know, the radio programs and the setting up the servers and everything. And I would like to see, you know, more people get involved because they have a skill set that's needed. Because, I mean, let's just be honest. I do consider myself to be living behind enemy lines. I just don't say that to be saying that because it sounds good, or, you know, yeah, this would be a good way to open up the program. But no, I truly mean that. I have been in the war zone.
Well, isn't that... Malcolm put it, the way Malcolm put it was, Mason-Dixon line starts at the Canadian border.
Yeah, and some would say it stands above it. But,
right,
you know,
yes.
There's a skill set that is needed, you know, for people to step forward, because the problem hasn't been resolved. You know, there are different websites out there like Pig State News or Killed by Police on Facebook that, you know, have tracked tens of thousands of people. More people have been killed by police since 2001 than died, you know, on 9/11, 2001. More police have killed people than, you know, died on 9/11. Get that through, people. When they say terrorists, you know, were responsible, you know, for the planes crashing that resulted in over 3,000 people losing their lives on 9/11. Well, the police have killed far more than that. So, you know, is it okay? Is it accurate to call them terrorists? I think so. That's, you know, in my view. And so there is, you know, people who have a skill set that's needed. And unfortunately, some of you guys are signing up for like Blackwater, you know, or Z services, going to work for these military contractors. And the federal government is giving local police departments grants to put these soldiers in uniform, in police uniforms, to, you know, oppress the people here at home. You know, we got to change that thinking, you know, what's going on, you know, in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, I have.
Well, listen, I don't know how much time we got left here. Not too much, probably. If it's okay, I'd like to give you the information about what people can do in terms of giving Tom a hand at this time.
Sure, please give us that information.
What we're trying to do is get him out from his. Get him paroled from his federal sentence. He's not coming home. He's being paroled to, he would be paroled to a state sentence in New Jersey, the same jurisdiction that Cindy Otto-Coley's case is out of. But that's a requirement for him to be able to take the next step, which is to, you know, try to get parole from the state. That's more of a struggle, and that's going to be time consuming. So we need to get him started on that. The same kind of a similar situation that Seiko Odinga was involved in trying to get from his federal sentence to New York, which ultimately he did. And he'll be coming up for a parole hearing soon. If somebody would like to write a letter on Tom's behalf, the hearing is November 12th. Tom is 68 years old now, and he's in a wheelchair. We're trying like hell to get him out of that wheelchair, to get him the proper medical care that will get him out of it. That's a struggle in of itself. But letters should be sent to the U.S. Parole Commission, and the address is 90K Street, Northeast, third floor, Washington, D.C., 20530. And let me just quickly give you Tom's address. It's Thomas W. Manning. You got to include his prison number, 10373016. 10373016. FMC Butner, B-U-T-N-E-R. Let me backtrack that just a second. FMC Post Office Box 1600. FMC Post Office Box 1600, Butner, North Carolina 27509. You'd appreciate any cards, letters, or support.
We'll also make sure that we have that posted. I'm looking at the information now. Morby.wordpress.com posted that information. We'll also that same information, so we know it's correct, and we'll post it to our podcast blog. So so again, that's November 12th when he's scheduled, when his parole board is supposed to meet in November.
Right, November 12th.
November 12th. All right, so is there anything you would like to say, Ray, in closing? And again, we want to thank you, you know, for all you've done in the struggle and continue struggle, especially on behalf of your comrades. So is there anything you'd like to say in closing as we wrap up this segment?
I appreciate you having me on again. I think you got a great show there. If I'm down in Baltimore, I'm sure I'm going by the station, meet you in person. You never know. I might get down there, you know. I got as far as Cleveland on the last trip. But I'll just reiterate something I said earlier, which is, you know, if the South African apartheid police had their way, Nelson Mandela and the other political prisoners under the apartheid regime would have never come home. They would have, they'd still be in Robben Island and places like it. In Ireland, the same thing. Palestine has a lot of political prisoners. They never forget them, no matter what the Zionists do to Gaza, no matter how many people they kill, no matter how many people they brutalize. The struggle there, whichever, you know, however low it is or however high it is, they always remember their prisoners. And that's basically what we have to do here. We will never have a movement in this country that can transform the society if we don't support our own political prisoners, because you can't challenge a system like this, as powerful as it is, and as you've duly noted, as fascist as it's become, unless we take care of our own as best we can.
The struggle continues.
It certainly does.
Thank you again, Ray, and we're going to have to not let so much time pass by next time that we have you on the program, but it was definitely good speaking to you.
It's great talking with you.
All right, you have a good night, sir.
Until next time.
Till next
time. Calling
up
the morning.
All right,
brother.
Peace.
All right.
Sister Amija.
I'm here.
All right, we got a few more minutes left in the program. I do want to address that article that I talked about, the New York Post. Again, you know, this is something that I think we should do for all our political prisoners, is set up these little watch campaigns or just watching the media. Because again, as we talked with Ray about, you know, how the mainstream media, these little local papers, state papers, you know, regional papers, how, you know, they'll basically just regurgitate whatever the police union is saying. And it's part of warfare. Propaganda is a tool of warfare. And so I think it's important, especially, you know, when these articles have comments, that we can then, you know, at least offer a different point of view to the casual reader. You know, because believe it or not, people do read those comment sections. And so, you know, that's the least we can do in a propaganda war, in opposing this garbage when it comes out. But on the New York Post piece, where they're calling Sundiata Okoli cop killer, saying that New Jersey cop killer goes free is the headline by Post editorial board. This is an editorial board, so this means,
right,
you know, that the New York Post, you know, endorses this this right. view. And I'm not going to read a whole lot from the article, but as I was reading it, I noticed a couple of lines that paragraphs that appear to be lifted from the Associated Press article, just basically saying all the same things. And, you know, basically, you know, anti-freedom, you know.
Right. Well, we had a situation here in Baltimore. The Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American History had, it's a newly curated exhibit of local freedom fighters from the civil rights movement through, you know, the Black Power movement. And Eddie Conway was asked to, you know, be a part of the presentation, as well as a woman by the name of Dr. Hicks, who is more, you know, well-known as a, you know, integrationist slash civil, you know, rights activist from the 60s. And she, you know, doesn't know anything, you know, about Eddie or Eddie's case. And, you know, a lot of people down here believe that, you know, she was used, you know, as a, you know, provocateur. She called, you know, people within the museum. She called other local politicians, you know, saying that she didn't want to be, you know, on a platform with him. And I was so proud of leadership at the museum that they literally, you know, they told her that she couldn't come in after she caused all of this confusion. It's like, you know, how do you call yourself a civil rights activist when you deny, you know, and try to erase somebody else's contribution? And, you know, once again, she was trying to, you know, call him, you know, cop killer and all this other, you know, all this other mess, which, you know, totally isn't true. And just, you can see that, you know, how much the system was trying to use her, you know, yeah. somebody, you know, petty bourgeoisie, you know, going against, you know, another person, you know, within the movement.
You know, the way I view these cops is racist terrorist suspects, especially when we're looking back at that time period, when you can, you know, look at the Philadelphia Police Department and see how the United States Justice Department was investigating them, you know, for many, many complaints of police racist terrorism against black and brown people. You know, this is all throughout history. So, you know, let's stop pretending like these people are heroes. And, you know, why I can't tell you this individual dead cop might have did this or participated in that assassination or killed this person or beat that person, violated their human rights, is chances are that they participated. Okay. They participated because these were department policies. All right. And I mean, I'm just not going to, hold back anymore and be, you know, like I'm walking on eggshells when I'm talking about these dead cops. These were terrorists. They belong to a terrorist organization. All right. We know about COINTELPRO. There's never been any, you know, as Ray talked about, resolution to that. You didn't have a Truth and Reconciliation Committee. And then, you know, these police unions and these widows want to come out and act like, you know, they weren't engaged in these illegal activities. They weren't engaged in racism and practicing white supremacy, you know. So, you know,
I don't know, that's totally clear with the Freedom of Information Act request documents that, you know, we're getting regarding, you know, Jaleel Mohsen in New York, the outright, blatantly, you know, racist, you know, letters that are being sent into these parole boards, right. You know, and the psychology, you know, the pathology, and the psychosis of, you know, these police officers, it extends beyond their supposed alleged, you know, duty to, you know, to supposed citizens, but, you know, we already know that their job isn't to, you know, protect and serve. But, you know, the behaviors and the psychosis and the racism, you know, is blatant.
Yeah, they're protecting and serving the system, which is what they were always set up to do, that system of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. So, you know, I ain't got a problem. And then it's like I'm seeing the same MO. Bring out the widow. Take a picture of them, show them holding an American flag, and, oh, you know, my husband's gone, and, you know, I'm not trying to be callous about it, but, you know, these people were monsters. These people were terrorists, you know, and I'm not going to act like, you know, it was any different. Right. It's documented history of their racism and terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these cops weren't standing up to racism within their ranks or corruption within their ranks. No, they were gladly participating in an illegal federal program to assassinate, murder, and frame, you know, members of the Black Liberation Movement and other leftist groups like, you know, the what's the name of the group? We just had Ray on, the United Freedom Front.
Right.
So, yeah. There was a last bit of information. We got about 5 minutes left in the program. Since I'm not pronouncing her name correct, Rusmia Odea, and she has a hearing coming up on October the 21st. I think this is in Detroit. She was a Palestinian activist. You know who I'm speaking of?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm trying to pull this article up. It doesn't want to allow me to pull it up. But she has a hearing coming up. Let me just tell you this. The information is posted on blacktalkradionetwork.com. It'll be posted on politicalprisonerradio.blogspot.com. But on October the 21st, this is the Committee to Stop FBI Repression are calling for a call-in campaign to prosecutors and tell them to drop the charges in relationship to her case. She is a victim of rape, prison brutality by the Israelis. What are they trying to accuse her of doing? Because I can't pull up any information right now, Sister Mijal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, you know, her case is, you know, similar to, sister, you know, Afia Siddiqui. You know, you have a woman who, you know, is resisting oppressive forces, and essentially they're making it seem like, you know, she's engaged in some type of, you know, as if she's the terrorist. She's being terrorized and brutalized, and the people are being terrorized and brutalized, but you have, you know, the system, you know, playing, you know, their spin on it.
Right. I'm looking at a MoveOn.org petition on her behalf, and they're demanding that U.S. Attorney Barbara McQuaid stop his indictment of, how you pronounce her name, Rusmia Youssef Oda, and drop all federal charges. She's 66 years old. She's a Palestinian American feminist, activist, educator, and community leader. And, as I was stating, she was at one time arrested and, held in a Israeli prison where she was raped. And so you'll be able to find out more information about that by clicking those links that's posted in the program description. Sis, we got 2 minutes. Did you have any final thoughts for tonight?
I would just encourage everyone to write those letters of support to Tom Manning. Mm-hmm. We need to get him, you know, out of the federal system. I mean, we obviously want, you know, all our political prisoners, you know, home. We want freedom for everybody. So, you know, all those letters matter. We already know that, you know, the FOP and the police are going to, you know, send in their form letters and to engage in, you know, the type of trash that they do to stop, you know, our prisoners from getting, you know, parole. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we ask people to do stuff, when we ask you to send in a letter, when we ask you to make those calls, you know, we mean it for real. You know, it's
for
not,
real, for real.
You know, it's for real. It's not, you know, something that you know, should be taken, you know, lightly. Every one of those letters matter. Every one of those calls matter.
I agree. Well, we're running out of time. We're getting ready to sign off here. Want to say good night to, again, the listeners in Greenville, South Carolina on WMXP. Also, listeners around the world that's tuned in to our Black Talk Radio Network stream. You've been listening to Political Prisoner Radio. We'll be back on the air next Sunday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Peace and blessings to all. Please be safe. And watch out for these killer cops, because they out there.